Hello, everybody, indeed. Welcome to Metanorn's mini-talk on Ald Noah Zero, our first impressions on Episode 1, Princess of Verz. I'm Jero, joined by Foshizzle.
Yo, what's up?
Smiley.
Hello.
And Skyline.
Hello.
So this is one of those A1 Pictures Urobuchi Gen series. Let's get some setup out of the way first about the personnel and such. We see on my anime list right now that it's going to be 12 episodes. At one point it was 24, so I'm kind of confused on how long this is going to run for sure. And maybe Mal is too. Could be a split core. Although usually shows that are split core, we kind of know right away. Like Valvrave and LaGrange and stuff. But the director, A. Aoki, has worked on other series with Zero in their names, such as Fate Zero and Gare Zero, and the character designer worked on Wandering Sun, which A. Aoki also directed. And Urobuchi Gen is the biggest name attached to this project, but what we're seeing now is that he's credited as the original creator, but that he's left the rest of the story to series composer Takeyama Katsuhiko, who, as Fosh notes here, wrote scripts for Boku no Pico.
Yeah, that kind of has me worried. I mean, there's some other shows on this list that I actually like. There's Gare Zero, which has an interesting twist and stuff at the beginning. And there's, you know, Mirror Nikki and a lot of shows that deal with, like, psychological. So it's like, that's cool and all, but it's, but like, I don't know, we just talked off air and we know someone said that script writer just takes whatever they can. So
I want to mention he's also doing a script for Tokyo ESP, so maybe you know, making a break for some more better things besides stuff like Boku no Pico.
Maybe we should give him the benefit of the doubt.
Oh yeah, I will, yeah, definitely. I just thought it was
sometimes
funny. I'm like,
you just take what's offered you, man.
Yeah, so I just thought it was funny. I'm like, of all shows, really, this dude? Okay, yeah. I'll see what he can do.
That's why he was hired in the first place.
True. Yeah.
And then Hiroyuki Sawano on music, who's done a lot of big soundtracks recently, like Kill la Kill, Attack on Titan, and Guilty Crown.
Yeah, those three. Mm-hmm. Even if the shows they reflect aren't really good, but the OSTs are great. That's one good thing.
All right, so let's talk about the first episode, which prepares us for the Martians planning to attack Earth. And it starts with a scene with Princess Asalem and Slain as the princess is heading down to Earth for a goodwill visit. She's asking Slain some questions about Earth because she's never been there. And then they kind of give some story also in the episode about the history of the Martians and their past. What do you guys think of the princess, at least what we saw of her in this first episode, and if we ever see her again?
Yeah, I like the princess. For me, it's just for another thing. Like, to me, I always compare her to like a Gundam. You know, she's going to be the figurehead that, oh, I want peace. And, you know, like a Lacus Klein of Gundam Seed. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, the princess is interesting. I mean, she's wanting to go to Earth to, you know, calm things down between both, you know, get the Earth and Mars, so it's nice to see that. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I'm kind of disappointed if she really isn't going to be here no more, but, like, well, that's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, I've seen comparisons made to the Gundam characters, like Reyna from Gundam Wing, although she seems somewhat oblivious to a lot of the information about what's going on. She basically, as far as we know, she's only just concerned about, you know, goodwill between Martians and Earthlings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the way I see it, despite Ura Butcher's inclinations for killing off characters every now and then, the princess has to survive because that's really like the only possible outcome that can give you a remotely interesting story. Like, say she's dead now, and then where do we go from there? Well, now the Martians are quote-unquote justified in their attack, and then Earth is basically screwed up the butt. And, well, that's okay, I guess, but it's kind of boring. I'd like to see her survive, and then maybe there'd be some sort of, maybe like a political fissure between factions of the Martians or something like that. You know, maybe some of them, you know, maybe this whole thing was actually planned by them to begin with, and they just some hobo-looking terrorists on Earth do some rather stupid things. Because let's face it, that was a pretty stupid thing to do in that kind of situation, given the tension. It's got to be, you know, arranged somehow, is my guess. And then, you know, if she survives and then that kind of stuff gets out, you know, it gets leaked out or something, that could make for some very, very interesting, you know, story to go ahead on.
I think she pulled a Padme.
I think she's got a nutter. She's got a Keira Knightley out there somewhere.
She does have a Keira Knightley
out
there.
Yeah, I can see that. But yeah, I think like what Smiley said, yeah, I'm agreeing with that. I think it's all set up. Because like these
it's,
people
it's better
want,
than the alternate take.
Right, I mean, it's like these people would want something to cause a war so they can take over Earth. But I can see that playing out.
Yeah, I think there's something to the idea of actually killing her off, but we'll get to that when the show actually does kill her off. But let's talk about some other characters here. The Kaizukas, specifically Inaho and Yuki, we see a scene where she wakes up late for drill instructing, and I thought she was going to run with the piece of toast in her mouth or whatever. But about Inaho, we see that he's a good student, but he's incredibly stoic. He's not there's not much emotion. He's a very calm guy. He's more focused on, you know, looking at ads for eggs on his phone, and he sees a missile. Hey, missiles, we should run, guys.
Yeah, that was very interesting. I don't know, I feel like stoic is even an understatement. It's more just like he really doesn't give a fuck. He's just like, hey guys, check it out. There's a missile. By the way, let's move away from that.
I was thinking like the guy from Office Space is just like, yeah, it's a missile. It'd be nice if we could move from this spot. Okay. And like they walk away like slow.
And then we get a little bit about Yuki, who we see as a drill instructor, and she works with Kurichiro Marito, who is sort of a guy that knows a lot about what's going on here, because he was involved in what we saw in a flashback in 1999 with Tanegashima, which is a thing that's been hushed. But, you know, he seems to be a guy that knows a lot about what's going on.
Yeah. It's, I mean, the whole spiel with him was about how I guess the Earth government, possibly more than one governments, I don't know if they have a unified government yet, are like covering things up and propaganda, you know, telling the kids, oh, you know, this is what actually happened, even though it's not what happened, and you know, the Martians are, you know, assholes, and we'll get them back, or something like that. And then apparently he makes it out to that the Martians have like a huge advantage over the Earth people, which I don't know how that's going to work out, because if it's that one-sided, I don't see any way for things to end very well. Besides, you know, any sort of, again, some sort of split between the Martians that would kind of affect their I guess military might against Earth. You know, something like that might help Earth, or maybe, you know, the kids will pull out some weird super mecha thing, but this isn't Gundam, so I don't think that's gonna happen. So I'm a little unsure of where they're going with that, with the whole portrayal of the Martians being so much more powerful than Earth.
You do have 18 of the 37 landing castles not dropping down on command.
Yeah, I wonder what was with that.
So a fifth column within their organization seems to me to be a likable alternative to what's happening. Yeah. So, you know, that could be an interesting story, you know, because they're not homogenous. They have disagreements and different things like that. And 15 years being kind of trapped there, you know, you can develop differences of opinion. Or just based on hatred. Oh, I hate that guy. That guy in that other castle over there, he's a jerk. I hate him. I'm not going to do it. You're going to drop down? Screw you. You just go ahead and drop down. I'm going to stay up here and chill.
I dare you. You do it. You go first. Okay.
And
you
that's
go first. And you go, oh, you win, I stay. You know, that's that kind of thing.
And that's what he says when they're in that sort of command room. They're talking about the 19 castles that are dropping. He talks about the lack of command structure and the whole King of the Hill, and that they're kind of their own rivals in a way that they're, I mean, they're bulking and they're strong, but they're not exactly the most unified.
Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah.
That kind of makes sense in a way because you're thinking about an empire, and they're kind of cut off from that. So it kind of goes down to the simple fact that all these guys, they have at least two or three different opinions about what that empire means.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have entire ranks of troops or whatever on those other castles that are like, we're loyal to our landlord, our guy. You know, we're not loyal to this empire thing. We've been cut off from it for 15 years.
Mm-hmm. And that kind of makes me a little curious about Count Cruteo, who we see is sort of a person that manages Princess Asylum and basically smacks Slain with his cane and basically calls him scum and stuff. Like, how much is he a party to anything that's going on here? And I wouldn't think he really is. If he found out that someone else was responsible for the princess's death amongst their own, I don't think that would make him happy.
Yeah, I hope that guy gets his comeuppance against Slain. I hope Slain can actually do something against that guy, because you would want him to. After that, I mean, even if it was such an obvious kind of "I'm a villain, I'm going to kick the puppy" moment.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it didn't feel too much like he was being portrayed as that bad of a person. I felt like it was more of just a show of the kind of just hatred that both sides have for each other. You know, they have this image of the others as, you know, crude, or maybe not crude, but like, you know, like disreputable people, even though it seems obvious that they haven't really interacted much for a while, and they've just been like brewing on this kind of, I guess, self-propaganda for a long time. And kind of going off of what we were talking about earlier with the different castles, I was just like thinking more of like, so we know that they're not organized and they've got this massive scramble for a land grab or something going on. Mm-hmm. But that's, again, that's only 19 out of 37 castles. And I guess where I was trying to go with like a bigger schism is like, maybe there's part of the Martians that are actually kind of, they agree with the princess's ideals, and they do want, you know, peace, and that could be interesting to see. Or maybe the other, you know, the other castles that didn't drop are just slow, or they've gone crazy. I don't know. That would be stupid, but you know, just something like that. Besides just a massive land grab. I mean, yeah, they may be rivals, but that's not really quite as big a split as I was thinking.
If 19 dropped and 18 didn't, then that would be as just about even as a divide as you could get with people that are in support of the princess's wishes to sort of be on peaceful terms with Earth and those that just want to go to war.
Right. That's what I think. And the whole thing with, like, mm-hmm. if someone did set it up, it might be a way to push the other 18 to follow the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that, like, okay, they're not going to agree with us, so let's make a big move and make something happen. And, you know, they get unified through the princess's death, like you were saying at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see that. But with Slain, I think, he does get kind of abused by the other guy. And I think it's like, obviously, you know, Slain's going to have to make the decision later on to stay with his group or join the Earthlings and help.
Mm-hmm.
I see that playing out easily as being a thing in that series.
Yeah.
And for being kind of co-main characters, as far as I can see, Slain and Inaho got a little more, well, maybe they got about the same, but they weren't really focused on. They weren't really really involved in the events, but maybe they will later once they start hopping in mechs and some other stuff and actually being able to move around and fight as opposed to Slain being trapped in that room.
Yeah, because they did mention in the beginning that the students actually do take part in mech training,
mm-hmm.
so they are training these kids to be soldiers eventually.
Yeah,
which was, it's an interesting thing. It's like it's part of their curriculum that they have to do it.
Yeah, it was, so that like, was yeah, kind of interesting cool. too. How the battle in Heaven's Fall caused basically the whole change in structure and in school curriculum. They were talking about, like, if you go into college, then you don't have to do drills.
So yeah, you can actually see the whole world is basically on a war right now. Like they're always going to be prepared for this war, and it's kind of neat how they stuck that in there, because usually mech shows like boy finds mech, mech is powerful, he wins, saves the world. In this one, it's like he's training to use robots from the very beginning, so
and
he has
not the
excuse.
Only one that the whole class is doing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So far, there's no special
robots. That brings up a point that I like about the show. Oop.
Go ahead.
That brings up a point that I kind of liked about the show, because it's really weird when you think about it, or it's not weird when you think about it, but if you kind of underscore it, holy crap, all these mecha shows have child soldiers. This is horrible. You know, you don't send teenagers like that off to war, and, you know, especially in, like, incredibly expensive, rare equipment and stuff like that, for crying out loud, you're asking for disaster, and it's horrible. You don't make children go to war. You know, the UN fights against this sort of thing. And it's like, so why are children mech pilots? Because the shows are marketed toward teenagers or older, and they like to watch other teenagers do things. So I kind of like how they kind of avoided that kind of deconstruction in a way, and just hit it from the very beginning. What we are doing is risky and terrible, and it's going to come back and it's going to bite us on the ass at some given point.
Mm-hmm. And Marito was very of that.
Mm-hmm. It's essentially trading away your future when you get right down to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that could be a reason why the other main character, I forgot his name, is the way he is. Knowing that eventually I'm going to get into these big-ass robots and fight, I may die. So it's like my life may not be... I can't, you know, live my full life. Mm-hmm. It may be cut short. Yep. So, yeah.
Yeah, some people, they put the dimmer on. Other people, they crank up the fire. If that's the case, I'm going to live like a bastard and go crazy.
Right, pretty much. I mean, I could... the end of the world, I could do anything can happen.
Yeah, and that's kind of the ideal soldier, who's very calm and doesn't panic in the face of danger.
That's in a lot of mechas too as well. The main pilot freaks out, you know, during battle, and like, oh my god, it's too much. And it's like the other guy. Yeah,
Berserker mode! Turn on Berserker mode!
Right. You don't need no Shinjis in this series. So.
Yeah. Or new types, for that matter.
Yeah, I hope that's not a thing.
New types, that's a Gundam reference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're just like another life form.
Right, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Next step of evolution.
Yeah.
We should concede priority, which is a weird... Anyway, this isn't Gundam Unicorn 7 discussion. This is... Noah's Era. Let's talk about the terrorist attack.
Wow.
I believe that it was Martians... because I believe they want war, but I can also buy in at the same time to the idea that she's not dead.
Yeah,
maybe
I don't
it
think
was the maid. What's her name? With the ridiculous name.
The lowly maid. Yeah. Yeah. What that name was weird.
But don't kill the lowly maid, not even in jest.
Hey, you were the one who suggested a Padme thing, okay? That would be exactly
Padme
what
is not
happened.
A lowly.
She's really the princess. I got it now. Mind blown. Know it.
An alternate to that is that maybe she was severely damaged, but she has some sort of Aldnoa thing going on inside her. Because they did mention that she's the inheritor of this sort of thing, so maybe the princess will be the super mech.
gotta climb in her or something.
I did.
Thank you for completing that statement, Josh.
Gotta combine.
I set them up, you knock them down.
Become one.
I had jokingly said on the Animation podcast that I thought I saw a shield come up, but the animation, it kind of, you know, it's always, you know...
Shield? Like a
Halo
superpower
shield?
Or someone holding up like a garbage can lid or something like that?
Well, I was just kidding, because when you see it in animation, it really does look like she gets hit like straight in the head with a missile. I guess the charm didn't work. Or maybe it did. We'll have to see.
I don't know. That's kind of weird. I'm giving you a charm from my father who died horribly.
Yeah.
Please don't die horribly.
A missile to the head would be a horrible death.
It can't happen twice, right?
Well, head, arm, shoulder blade, butt. It doesn't matter. If missile size hits you, you're gone.
And then that last scene with the sort of colony drop, the castle drop on New Orleans, and the explosion and death that it caused.
That scene was, I was like, whoa, that caught me off guard. Mm-hmm. Like, holy crap.
Yeah, and how Sawano did that with the Mika Kobayashi song was pretty great.
I was waiting for Kill Me, Kill music to kick in, Before My Body's Dry song start playing. Like, oh god.
I found that scene actually a bit ridiculous because just think about it. Normally when you colony drop, you kind of absolutely devastate whatever is underneath, but the colony is also lost. I mean, and this being, I believe this is one of the castles themselves are crashing in, right? So this mm-hmm. being the case, obviously the castles aren't being, destroyed as well, because that would be kind of a stupid way to attack Earth. Mm-hmm. I don't think advanced Martians need kamikaze attacks. That doesn't make any sense. So just like, but you think about that, like the amount of devastation that impact put out, like if it absolutely leveled an entire city, there's no way a castle spaceship thing could have survived. But then again, alien technology. So
yeah, it is Martian technology. So
it's just like,
But there was something left at the very end after you see all the explosion kind of turn off. It was like a flower looking thing. So yeah, we don't really know if these people got out before. So it's like, if they didn't really get out and they killed themselves, like you kind of defeat your purpose. Maybe. Killing your own people and killing some Earthlings, like, okay.
Maybe the Martians have explosion-proof technology, which would help the princess survive as well.
Or they're immortal. Valvrave. Yes.
Hitting the Earth at, however meters per second, missile hitting you in the face. It's okay, you've got explosion armor, flak armor rank 5 or something, leveled it up and now you can't be hurt by explosives or something along those
Crank
lines.
Crank up the inertial dampers.
Yeah, there you go. Although I don't know if would actually help a missile hitting you in the face, but you never know.
They're all super advanced people, so all of them are accelerator.
Titanium skin. Yeah, all titanium skin.
I don't think titanium is going to save you from.
Just be melted slag.
Depends on what kind of character you are.
And then I liked in the last scene, they show the kids looking out there. They see basically what they think are stars following. It's just all these other tiny castles.
That's dead people.
Wishing. And that's, go ahead.
That's just typical Urobuchi, isn't it? When you get right down to it. Just kind of put that hell and then that hope right next to each other and just let it stew for a bit.
But what I liked is that they didn't kill the kids. They didn't do a scene where, it dropped on them, and then comes the explosion from the nuke killing them. Like, I thought that would have kind of cheapened it. I kind of like just the idea of, look at the, these innocent kids don't know the pains of war.
I don't know. I thought that avoiding doing that made it more powerful, but simultaneously also cheesier. I mean, you gotta admit that whole scene was a little like, oh ho ho, they're watching the rest of their race getting wiped out by aliens from the sky. Meanwhile, they don't know anything and they're making wishes for peace. But it's like, if they had gotten killed too, it'd be like, oh well, okay, I guess we're all screwed now. Whereas now, like, oh, there's a little bit of hope. Look at the kids. There's hope. I mean, I guess if they had gotten hit by a castle, they could have gone with the whole doll in the rubble thing as well. it might have gone just as well, possibly. But I felt having them just being onlookers was more powerful than having them die.
Me, John. It's a shooting star, and it's getting closer. Are they supposed to do that?
Some of them do.
I want a PlayStation 4. I just said some stupid dream. Stupid wish. And some other notes here, just about the mecha that we got to see a little bit of, the KG-6 Sleipner. It's the mecha that we've seen in the promo images for the show, and they call them cataphracts, which is basically just armory. And that's what the kids are using in shooting 75mm bullets, cannon bullets.
Did it have six legs? It's called the KG-6. But does it have six legs?
I thought it was bipodal.
It's regular two legs.
Mm-hmm.
Sleipner was one of the Norse mythology gods' steed, and it had six legs.
Oh, okay.
Mecha horses.
Maybe they have a mode where they can have six legs.
God.
I don't know, but definitely in the premiere, they did not have six legs.
Pulling the Macross on us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think we've even seen anything in trailers or PV vids that would show much of the KG-6 is in action, so I guess we'll have to wait and see on that.
Yeah, maybe the reference was just
like
the name.
It had bulk to it. It had weight. It felt, after, watching shows, from Bones to where things don't look like they could fall apart if a kid picked them up or anything like that. I kind of like how these things that just were squat, very militaristic, very sturdy sort of mech design.
Yeah. Even Chamber from Gargantia, a little bit that way. A little more floaty, but, they definitely made it a point in one of those episodes to show the weight of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so overall thoughts on this episode. I liked it. It started off with a bang in the literal sense, and I think there's a lot of interesting stuff with this world involving the conflict between the Martians and the Earthlings, and we talked about some of this stuff how it affected schooling and such. I kind of like all of that backstory elements. I like Marito, and I really like Nakai Kazuya as him. He's probably my favorite character so far. We have yet to learn a lot more. I felt like we learned more about him than anyone else, and I'm looking forward to more. Fosh?
Same here.
Yeah. Same here, looking forward to more, like they did. And now we gotta find out who blew up New Orleans, you know. Gotta add that lyric in the songs.
Smiley, anything else?
Well, when I saw the episode, the first thing that came to my mind was this is the sequel to an old show called Brighter Than the Dawning Blue, which is based on, I believe, a visual novel. But anyway, in that show, it was basically the moon people versus the earth people, and the exact same tensions and war, and princess goes to earth for I guess peace talks or something. I forget what it was. It was a pretty show, but and here we have the moon that's destroyed. Maybe the moon people, they went through the gate and then they went to Mars, and this is the sequel to that show. Who knows? but anyway, I just saw lots of parallels between these two shows.
Or like the spiritual successor.
Yeah, something like that. Except probably, hopefully not as generic as that one was.
Yeah, a lot of shows do that. Especially Mecha, that kind of setup.
Mm-hmm.
And Sky, any more thoughts?
Just a general kind of open letter to science fiction writers. Man, don't mess me up like that. When you talk about the moon being destroyed, or part of it being destroyed, and chunks of it going into Earth orbit, that's eventually going to, succumb to gravity, and it's eventually going to fall. And I see stuff like that, and my mind instantly goes to all the side stories that happened across the world. How people were preparing. Did they move people? Did they chase this debris trajectory so that, it wouldn't be absolutely horrible when those things finally touched down? What did they do to prevent damage? There's just entire stories in there that I wish they would kind of in some way flesh out a little bit.
Well, they did it in Sinful Gear, so that's what happens. So the moon was blown up, but it's not there.
I'm gonna reach to the internet and slap you.
Well, maybe the Metro Girls will save everyone. They'll sing and do their thing.
Sing. this is
an alternate history. This is an alternate history. So I wonder if Sailor Moon still exists, or is it Sailor Satellite?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Sailor Mars would definitely be a different character.
That is kind of crazy. Like, 2014. Like, how many times do you see 2030 or 2199 or something like that?
3001, whatever. Like,
this
yes.
could happen.
I kind of like that. Really. I kind of like that. It does make you kind of think about, you know, history mm-hmm. in that way. That if something, you know, mind-bogglingly big happened that we didn't predict, discovering alien technology just kind of yeah. left around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a fan of alternate realities. Those are cool. Mm-hmm. And we'll have surely more to talk about in the coming weeks. So thank you for listening to our mini talk on episode 1 of Out Noah Zero. For Fosh, Smiley, and Sky, I'm Jero, and we'll see you next week. Bye.